Catholic commentary. Spiritual warfare. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Jesus 911.
Good morning, Jesus 911, Virgin Most Powerful Radio. My name's Ruben Nava. My partner is Jesse Romero. We make up a two-man car. We are 10-8, two retired law enforcement officers from L.A. County, and just here to bring you some briefing and some intel what's going on in our church and in the news. So,
well, Ruben, I am reporting for duty. I am 10-8, and we are here. This is a show where Jesus Christ is Lord, and this is a show with the Blessed Virgin Mary is our Queen Mother.
Amen.
Ruben, one of the things about this show is we talk about things in the church and even outside the church, as we're going to do today.
Yes.
The first topic we're going to talk about is what's going on with the Latin Mass. What is Rome going to do with the Latin Mass? That's a church topic. And that's important to us because that's our most powerful form of worship here on planet Earth. And the second topic we're going to talk about is there's a parallel between the Roman Empire, their government, the inflation, the collapse of their economy, making up money as they went. There's a direct parallel with them and the United States. So that's what we're going to be talking about today on the second half.
Awesome. All right. Well, as you know, I'm in love with the Latin Mass, and that's my heritage, and I'm gonna fight to the death to keep it. You know, I'm not gonna stand idle as some of our forefathers did in throughout the last 50, 60 years, and they just kind of let the things happen and thinking.
And they will pay for it. Trust me, they will pay for it. That's just an act of cowardice. I mean, I'm gonna be as respectful as possible, but I'd hate to be. I'd hate to have a red hat, Ruben, on Judgment Day. Living in this time and not speaking out.
And you know, our Lord always raises up great saints during times of persecution. So let's
he's doing the same right now.
There are saints that are they're making their resume right now, just so when it's all said and done, we have to support those good priests and those bishops that have our best interest in mind.
Amen. So there's an article here. It's and by the way, this doesn't surprise me. It says the article, Pope Francis sets his sights on the Latin Mass. Yeah. Again, this doesn't surprise me. It's by Eric Sammons. He's the chief editor at Crisis Magazine. Here's what he says, and then we'll engage with the article. He says, the rumors appear to be true. Pope Francis is planning to rescind Summorum Pontificum, Pope Benedict's 2007 motu proprio liberalizing the celebration of the traditional Latin Mass, hereinafter called TLM, which Benedict dubbed the extraordinary form of the Latin Rite. This at a time when the TLM has been flourishing while most of the church is experiencing significant declines. Before exploring why Pope Francis is considering this radical move, it might be helpful to briefly review the history of the TLM over the past 60 years. Now, this might be new to a lot of people that are listening right now, so this is very interesting.
Yeah.
In the mid-20th century, many leading Catholics believed in a need for liturgical reform. How exactly that reform would play out was hotly debated, but most Catholic liturgists and theologians agreed that some changes were needed. Now, here's my comment. This is not the article. I believe that there was already an infiltration of modernists way before Vatican II. Why do I say that? An infiltration of modernists, Marxists, and Masons way before the council. How do we know that? Because that's why Pope Pius X wrote the document against modernism in the early 20th century. I mean, this is 50, 60 years before the council.
Mm-hmm.
They were already infiltrating the church through Marxism and through Masonry and modernism. That's why he wrote that encyclical. Now, So what was Vatican II all about? Here's my take. This is not the article. This is me. Vatican II was just their coming out party of the Marxists, Modernists, and Masons. What do I mean by a coming out party? Kind of just like prostitutes come out of a paper mache cake at a secular guy's bachelor's party. That's what was happening at Vatican II. They were already in the cake. They just came. They felt that it was time. There was revolution in the air. And they thought that this is a safe time for them to come out and basically be made manifest and visible.
Yeah. Pope Paul VI also, you know, he even admitted that the smoke of Satan has infiltrated the fissures of the church. And like the article goes on to say, it admits that Pope Pius XII and a lot of traditionalists, that they Pope Pius XII is like that leading figure, that one that's the last good pope that they look to, you know, whether you take that stance or not, you know, I'm just saying that's what a lot of traditionalists look at.
Right.
So Pope Pius XII, he's responding to this desire, you know, of making some liturgical reform. He authorized a few changes to the Mass in the 50s. There were relatively minor, and for pew sitting Catholics, the reforms were on a whole barely noticed. Then in the early 60s, the Second Vatican Council essentially declared that, yes, the Church should make more reforms to the Mass. This led to wholesale changes in the liturgy with the institution of the Novus Ordo Missae, the New Order Mass. That's something just with the name of it, right? The New Order Mass, you know.
No, just the name of it is problematic, yeah, Ruben, because that smacks of reset, globalism, masonry. You're right. I mean, that is a troubling name. It always has been for me, even before I kind of discovered the Latin Mass, I'll be honest with you.
And, you know, you look at the back of your currency that says Novus Ordo Seclorum, One World Order, you know. Promulgated by Pope Paul VI in 69, this is, of course, is the Mass as said in almost every Latin Catholic parish in the world today, and which Pope Benedict called the ordinary of the Latin Rite. So ordinary form of the Latin Rite. Well, going back to Pius XII, you know, in addition to the new Easter Vigil, because he made some changes, modified on an experimental basis in 1951 and now made permanent, he promulgated the rites for Palm Sunday, Holy Thursday, and Good Friday, the most important ceremonies in the Roman liturgy. So there are some people who take exception to that Holy Week was changed. You know, most traditionalists, they'll use this 1962 Missal, which have the changes in him. And, you know, also Pope Pius XII was the one who, you know, solemnly defined the assumption of the dogma of the faith, saying that, you know, the Virgin Mary was assumed into heaven.
That's huge.
Yeah. So
huge.
Okay. So that was going on in the 50s. But and if you look back at Pius XII, Jesse, he's the one who put Arnaboli Bugnini in charge of this. And that's problematic. And then John the 23rd did away with them, and Paul the 6th rehabilitated him and brought him back. So
he's one of the main players in all of this.
Yeah. So basically, Pius XII changed three things. He changed Holy Week, and then he allowed bizarre experiments. Like in 1958, Pius XII gave permission for seriously wacky liturgical practices, such as allowing the congregation to recite along with the priest the Introit, the Gradual, the Offertory, and the other Mass propers, as well as the Our Father, but only at low Mass. During his reign, the dialogue Mass was also promoted. So there was already starting this dialogue Mass where we have to answer. When you weren't at Latin Mass, the only ones who answer are the altar servers. They stand in place of us. The last thing he did was he attempted to change the Psalter. That's the Book of Psalms that the priest reads, the devotional. And there was some problems there. But I look at Pope Benedict, Jesse, Pope Benedict the 16th in May of 2005. The Pope said this, and it's pretty smack dab in the face of what we're looking at. The Pope is not an absolute monarch whose thoughts and desires are law. On the contrary, the Pope's ministry is a guarantee of obedience to Christ and his word. He must not proclaim his own ideas, but rather constantly bind himself and the church to obedience to God's word in the face of every attempt to adapt it or water it down and every form of opportunity.
That's always been my understanding of the office of the Pope, what you just read there. I've been telling people that for 25 years.
Yeah.
He safeguards. He's a custodian. He doesn't make change. He doesn't change the doctrines of Christ. He's here to pass on the apostolic tradition from one pope to another.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go back to the article, Ruben. It says here, however, the changes were not accepted by all Catholics. A small number of Catholics, led by Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, fought to keep celebrating what was dubbed the traditional Latin Mass, the Mass as celebrated before the Novus Ordo. This led to serious conflict between Lefebvre and the Vatican, and many church leaders of the time argued that the traditional Latin Mass had been abrogated, meaning that celebrating it was no longer lawful. There is no going back, according to this view. But devotees of the TLM did not give up. Pockets in the church still celebrated the TLM. And after more than a decade of conflict, Pope John Paul II in 1984 granted an indult permission for the traditional Latin Mass to be celebrated as long as certain conditions applied, including permission from the local bishop. That's the only problem that I have right there with that set. Because if the bishops are lefty, they're not going to allow it. It says, for the next two decades, this indult was in effect, and the TLM remained a relatively fringe part of the Catholic Church during this time. We're about to go into a break. We're talking about Pope Francis is setting his sights on the Latin Mass. What all that means to us, by Eric Sammons from Crisis Magazine. We'll be right back. Don't change that dial. Stick around.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
We're back, Jesus 911, two-man car. Talking about the Latin Mass and what Pope Francis looks like he might be heading in this direction to make some changes to Summorum Pontificum. So we're talking about that. A good article by Eric Sammons. So you can go to the show page and you can read the whole thing. And all right, Jess.
Yeah, go ahead and pick up where we left off, Ruben. Okay.
How we're in the mid-2000s? Oh, no.
It's right here. But devotees of the TLM did not give up. Pockets in the church still celebrated the TLM. And after more than a decade of conflict, Pope John Paul II in 1984 granted an indult permission for the traditional Latin Mass to be celebrated as long as certain conditions applied, including permission from the local bishop. For the next 2 years, this indult was in effect, and the TLM remained a largely fringe part of the Catholic Church during this time. However, by the mid-2000s, the TLM, while still attended only by a small portion of Catholics, was growing in popularity, particularly among younger faithful Catholics. And the growth was not just in numbers, but in enthusiasm. More books, websites, and other resources were dedicated to the TLM. In response, in 2007, Pope Benedict XVI issued Summorum Pontificum, which declared, number one, any priest could celebrate the TLM without explicit permission of his bishop. And number two, the TLM was never abrogated. So he answered that question, which was a question that was pressing on a lot of people's minds. It was never abrogated. The Pope wrote that what earlier generations held as sacred remains sacred and great for us too. And it cannot be all of a sudden entirely forbidden or even considered harmful. So Pope Benedict, he put the issue to rest when people are saying, it's abrogated, it's harmful. He squashed all those arguments. Yeah. With the release of Summorum Pontificum, the floodgates were open. TLMs began to be celebrated in more parishes throughout the world, and many young Catholics flocked to it. While in comparison to the global membership of the church, the percentage of Catholics attending the TLM remained quite small. A growing and passionate desire among many of the faithful for this traditional form of the liturgy grew. This takes me back to the present, writes Eric Sammons. If the rumors are true, and many reliable sources are reporting they are true, then Francis essentially wants to return to the pre-Sumerian pontificate days, when priests had to receive an indult from their bishop in order to celebrate the TLM. Ruben, you want to pick it up from there?
Okay, I just want to give you some practical things that I was seeing, because I was going through this, Jesse. I was already in the Latin Mass as of 1995, and my priest there, he explained to me that when this came out, he was really excited because that's all he wanted to do was say the Latin Mass. Well, the bishop would say, okay, you know what? Let's say I want to say it. They're going to say, okay, Romero, you say the Latin Mass. Well, I don't even like the Latin Mass. Well, have Nava do it because he's the one who wants to do it. But they would just, to spite that priest who's has a traditional bent, they would do stuff like that. You know, it's just really, it was really annoying. And not to mention that, it attacks, you know, your conscience. And some of these priests, that they said they didn't want to say the new Mass. They were trained in the old rite, you know.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, and so then during Cardinal Mahoney's reign, this was going on. And so every time that there would be an SSPX chapel that would raise up, he would put an indult Mass near them. So, for instance, in Arcadia, California, where the Our Lady of the Angels is, he would do an indult Mass at Santa Teresita Hospital once a week. But then those people had to travel to different churches. They didn't have a weekly Mass there. So that priest, Father Bishop, I know him, well, he would go to another church, you know, St. Vincent's and I forget the route. But for like 4 or 5 weeks, he would be moving around. And it made it really difficult for those, you know, those people had to travel for great distances because they weren't close. And so it was just, you could see that they were just trying to
harass
and squash these TLMers. And it wasn't good.
They were bullies, Ruben. Yeah. Some people with power, even when they have a red hat, absolute power corrupts some people.
Right.
And this is a good example of that.
The practical impact of this action is unclear currently. Although a priest is technically free to celebrate the TLM without episcopal approval, most priests know that they need permission anyway if they don't want to be banished to the nether reaches of their diocese. Like in the sheriff's department, where they used to call that freeway therapy, right? It sends you to some far-off station or jail. Bishops can make a priest's life difficult if he steps out of line, so the process for a priest to celebrate a TLM likely would remain essentially the same in most dioceses. However, it's not outlandish to assume that revoking Summorum Pontificum could result in a sea change in attitude among bishops, whereas before only the most adamantly anti-TLM bishops had prevented its celebration in their diocese. Now many bishops who privately don't prefer it could see that their prejudices have been confirmed by the Vatican and become emboldened to deny permission where earlier it would have been granted. So likewise, any young seminarians and priests might guess which way the wind is blowing and hesitate to learn the TLM for fear of being ostracized for being too extreme. As anyone who has been employed by the church would tell you, there are many unwritten rules of ecclesial work, and bishops aren't afraid to take even a suggestion from the Vatican and transform it into a hard and draconian diocesan rule. Although the TLM is already a political issue in many chanceries, this act from the Pope could tip the scales considerably to the anti-TLM side. And so, I mean, it's just a thought came to my head. It says, so if you want to live a life of significance, look at what the masses are doing, then go the opposite. You know, Christ called his apostles to be a contradiction to the world primarily, and then we us secondarily. So, you know, the masses are all going to the Novus Ordo, and I just see a growth in the TLM, Jesse, and since COVID especially, it is on the rise. They're having to add new masses. The churches are filled up. I know FSSP and SSPX are getting a lot of families coming to them. So,
and the reason is, Ruben, is because people want to go somewhere where they find consistency, where they could find the worship of God the same every single weekend.
Yeah.
And also where the worship of God doesn't emulate the secular world, Hollywood or Protestantism with guitars and drums. And they don't want anything that even smacks of the world. When people go to the TLM, they want to know that they're stepping into heaven on earth, as the theology of the Mass has always taught. going back to the article, it says here, likewise, young seminary. No, you already read that here.
No matter what
we guess the impact might be, the question remains, why would Pope Francis do this? If a CEO decided to shut down the fastest growing division in his company, it would be a head scratcher for sure. So why would Pope Francis look to limit the reach of what is, in terms of growth, the most successful movement in the church today? The most likely answer is that he and other Vatican officials behind this move realized that the growth of TLM communities is not just about the way the mass is celebrated. In many ways, it represents. Here's the kicker. This is the cash value of the article. In many ways, it represents a repudiation of the entire post-Vatican project into which the church leaders up to Francis have invested so much. He says, imagine if the NFL decided to change the sport of football in order to improve it, using a soccer ball rather than a football.
There's nothing wrong with that.
adding five players to each side, allowing players to go out of bounds and then back in. Then they spend years and millions of dollars to promote this new change. However, instead of bringing in new fans, these reforms result in people flocking to an upstart league that plays football the old way. Humble leaders would acknowledge their mistake and return to the original. But all too often, leaders in this situation dig in, and instead of scrapping their bad ideas, they attack those who want to return to the original. Sadly, it looks like our church leaders, including Pope Francis, might be opting for the latter option. In other words, digging their heels in and continuing a failed experiment. That's my comment. Mm-hmm. For Catholics attached to the TLM, this move by the Vatican could lead to a lot of hard questions. It looks for now like the change will grandfather in priests and communities already celebrating the TLM. But what happens when a bishop decides to rescind permission under the spirit of the new indult? Should a priest continue to celebrate it anyway? Should lay Catholics seek out canonically irregular communities such as the SSPX that will celebrate it? There are no easy answers to these questions, and I don't pretend to have them. My prayer is that it never comes to that, that the Pope realizes the growth of the TLM is the best thing happening in the church today, and he should do all he can to promote and encourage it. If he doesn't, he might one day find that the only Catholics left will be those who need to turn off the lights and lock the doors, since everyone has already left the building for good. Yeah. That was a good summation of his article. Here's my comment, Ruben. Some of these Catholics are going to go because they have a real love for the Latin Mass. They don't want to get into the political fights of the church. They don't even know the arguments. But some people do have a real calling to worship God in the Latin Mass, and they're going to go to an underground TLM or the SSPX. That's what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's why I was at, for many years at an
underground church.
Independent priest, because they weren't giving us what the church promised to us. And, a lot of these people, the inventors of the Novus Ordo, they were trying to say, let's go back to the primitive ways, what the early church did. And, I pulled up a comment from Pope Pius XII. He said this was the same argument that the Protestant reformers used to justify it. Pope Pius XII had condemned attempts to subvert the liturgy under the guise of a return to primitive practice. In his encyclical Mediator Dei, 1947, he described this tendency as a wicked movement that tends to paralyze the sanctifying and salutary action by which the liturgy leads the children of adoption on the path to their Heavenly Father.
Ruben, that's called the error of antiquarianism, and we'll do a show on that where the modernists say we got to go back to the early church. That's called the error of antiquarianism, and popes have already denounced that. It would be like this when a modernist says, "Well, we got to go back to the way it was done in the New Testament." I'll say, "Okay, well, in the New Testament, they didn't have toilets or showers. They didn't have a stove or refrigerator. Should we go back to that? Should we be consistent and let's go back to the early church the way they lived?" Oh, no, not that. in other words, that's the error of antiquarianism. The church has already talked about this, and this is the errors of the modernists. Let's get rid of microwaves. The early apostles didn't have microwaves. Let's get rid of our cars. Get rid of your iPhone. They won't get rid of anything, Ruben. They only want to get rid of the mass.
Yeah. Yeah.
See how inconsistent they are?
Exactly. Yeah. Dr. Peter Posnewski has a good... when we pick it up on the other side of the break, I want to cover what Dr. Peter
okay,
says.
Okay.
Right back.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. I was talking on the other side of the break about Dr. Peter Kwasniewski and his book, and we had him on our show a couple times, Reclaiming Our Catholic Birth, Our Roman Catholic Birthright. I'm holding the book up right here. And it's really good about the Latin Mass. And he says people are in four camps, Jesse, since Vatican II, since all these changes. The first camp is those who believe that the changes after the Council, though part of a necessary updating of the Church, went too far in practice and should be revisited. Number two, those who believe that these changes were timidly held back by conservative forces and not nearly comprehensive or radical enough. Three, those who think that whatever happened, happened, and we might as well make the best of it we can today. No need to relitigate the whole thing. That's what a lot of what we call Orthodox Novus Ordo people, a lot of friends of mine who are in that camp. Well, they get tired of hearing me talking about the problems in the Mass. And then the last thing, this is where I stand, those who believe that we have a duty before God to hold fast to the inheritance of our fathers and who accordingly think that approaching the liturgy with the mentality of progress and relevancy is the wrong way to let it be itself and do what it alone can do, and moreover, a path doomed to self-parody and implosion the more one goes down it.
Ruben, there's in the book of Acts, the apostles go up to Gamaliel, or Gamaliel gives this advice. He says, he says to the Pharisees or the Sadducees, I forget the audience, I'd have to look at my Bible, but he says, just let the apostles go and preach and do their thing. If it's not of God, it's going to fold.
Yep.
It's going to come to naught. It's going to come to naught. It's going to basically vanish. The Pope, he should follow Gamaliel's basically prescriptions. If the Latin Mass is needs to be replaced, if it's not divine, if it's not from God, if it's passé, if it's something that we should move away from, God will take care of it, because God, the Holy Spirit, leads us into all truth. And so I don't think any Pope should come in and make any type of proclamation. Let it organically play itself out. If the Novus Ordo is something that was a construct from Annibal Bonini and has inherent problems, it's going to play out, Ruben, and it will vanish. It'll die like a dry fig leaf. But if it's of God, the Latin Mass or the Novus Ordo, it's going to flourish until the second coming of Christ. I think that should be the Pope's position, is to allow everything as is. And if you allow everything as is, what are we seeing? We're seeing the emptying of Novus Ordo parishes around the country, closing down. And we're seeing the building of TLMs around the country. He should allow the Holy Spirit to organically let this play out and not get involved. That would be my request to the Pope.
There's some, in traditional circles, you'll hear this quote. We are what you once were. We believe as you once believed. We worship as you once worshiped. If we are wrong now, you were wrong then. If you were right then, we are right now. So that you couldn't say it any better, because, you know, you can't take away something that's been going on for that was passed on from the early church. And, I just brought some during those times when I was going through my conversion to back to tradition. These are the stacks of little tracts that I read.
I know you gave them all to me. I have the same ones.
I bought them for you, Jess.
And I read them all, and they made sense. I just fought with my conscience for many years, that's all.
A lot of Michael Davies books, it just gives you an understanding of what was going on.
back then. I could list, you know, the names of them, but for time's sake, we're gonna move on.
Ruben, I know. I mean, this topic is near and dear to you, and let me just share one more story about the power of Latin. And this is, you're gonna laugh when you hear this story. Okay, on last month, June 5th, I went to go give a conference, several conferences over in Bakersfield, California. It's a Hispanic community. We have a mutual friend there, Ruben, Jose Robledo. He's, you know, good man. And so I went up there, and after the Saturday night presentation, they're taking me back to the hotel. We stopped by, I think it was like some type of a mini mart in a gas station. It was just a little mom and pop's mini mart. So I got off to grab some, you know, I think I wanted just some orange juice or something before I went to bed. So me and the guy named Eddie Sardisco, the guy that was taking me back to my hotel, we walked into this mini mart, and I noticed that there outside were speakers that were blasting Gregorian chant.
Wow.
I'm like, what? I mean, this is the barrio, Ruben. This is there's like, there's gangs and graffiti and homeless in that area.
Wasn't Tim Gordon up there?
Yeah. Probably not particularly in that area. Yeah, but yeah, he was that. Yeah, that was his neighborhood. So I walk into the store, and I'm intrigued because they're blasting Gregorian chant through speakers outside this little mini mart, this little Stop and Rob. And when I walked in, I noticed there were Indians in there. Now, it was the Indians from India with "I have a dot in my forehead" Indians. Wow. Okay. So I'm like saying, what are these are Hindus. Why were Hindu Indians playing Gregorian chant outside their little store from the speakers to the public? So I'm purchasing my items, and I asked. I said, hey, I'm kind of curious. I said, I'm Catholic, and that music that you're playing out there, that's Catholic Gregorian chant. They go, yes, I know. I said, why are you playing that out there? And they said, we have a real homeless problem out here, and we've tried everything. Because, you know, they're nickel and diming our customers, and they're always in the front just basically panhandling. They said, once somebody told us about this music that demons don't like it, so we started playing it, and all the homeless got up and left. They've never come back. As soon as we play the music, they move away, blocks away from this music. They can't be in the presence of this music that we play. So we play it, and it's taking care of our homeless problem. Now, here's my take, Ruben. I read an article recently that 49% of homeless have mental illness. And mental illness manifests itself many times. It looks exactly like the traits of diabolical affliction, diabolical possession. When you look at somebody with mental illness in a room, and in the next room, somebody who's demonically possessed, they manifest the same physical, facial, bodily movements and characteristics. So here's my take. I've always said that I believe many of the homeless are diabolically afflicted as a result of objectively living in mortal sin. As Father Ripperger says, one mortal sin invites a demon. And what's interesting is these Indian owners tried everything, Ruben, to try to get rid of the homeless problem. The only thing that got rid of them was Gregorian chant, which tells me a lot of these people that living in mortal sin in the street have some type of diabolical attachment to them, and that's why they can't hear Gregorian chant. Once again, even Indian Hindus know the power of Latin.
Wow. I'm going to have to tell that to Sheriff Ian White right here. Because he's trying to clean up the homeless in L.A., Jeff.
Well, you know what? I'll write this for you so you can just have it, and I'll give you the dates and times, exactly everything, so you can give it to him and tell him, here's an idea.
Yeah, they're cleaning up Venice Beach. They're cleaning up downtown L.A. in the cities. You know, cities. They're not, I mean, it's all part of the county, but it's not areas that the sheriffs patrol. So it's kind of causing a lot of friction out here because the board of supervisors and the city council were like, what are you doing? You know, that's not where you should be spending your time. But he says, you guys don't want to, you know, take care of the problem. So we're going to regulate space. So people are just laying their tents down everywhere. It's a dump out here in LA, Jesse. You left just in time. So. I'm serious. Gosh.
Is this microphone on? I can't believe that beautiful Los Angeles has turned into what you're describing. Oh. No, you're right. I haven't seen it in a long time, Ruben.
The tent city used to come up at night, but now it's just all day long. It's ongoing 24/7. Businesses suffer. People can't walk the sidewalks because they don't want to go. First of all, they don't want to go near these people. There's urination and
well, a lot of them are dangerous, Ruben. They're dangerous. Let's just be honest. A lot of these guys too are ex-convicts that what Newsom let out. And this is why there's a spike in crime all over California. You have parolees that should be in prison. These are dangerous guys. And somebody will say, well, just, you're a Catholic speaker. Don't you want them to come to know Jesus? Yeah, I do want them to come to know Jesus inside of their jail cell. I do. Jesus can meet you in your jail cell and change you in there. But it doesn't mean just because you come to know Jesus and follow him that you don't have to pay your debt to society.
That's right. That's a good point, Jess.
Yeah. Ruben, there's another article here. We're not going to get to all of it, so I'm just going to just kind of give an overview of it, then maybe we'll just filch some stuff there. The article is called Modern Day Serfdom is the End Goal. In other words, the guy that wrote this article, he's an economist named Martin Armstrong. He's saying that the end goal for the Democrat Party that have all the levers of power right now, the Biden administration, they want to turn America into kind of a serfdom state. So let me define serfdom, because we won't get through the whole article. It's very serfdom is all land is owned by landowners, the nobility, or the church, or monarchs. And a serf would be like you and I, is any peasant who has to do manual labor for someone else in order to get to keep his land. So while most serfs were farmers, some serfs were craftsmen, like the village blacksmith, miller, or innkeeper. By the third century, the Roman Empire faced a labor shortage, and so large Roman landowners, the wealthy, increasingly relied on Roman freemen, the little guy, acting as tenant farmers instead of slaves to provide labor. And this way you're able to keep a little bit of property, but you have to work for these great landlords. The article argues that this is where America's going if we don't put a stop to it. And the article makes a comparison between many of the Roman emperors, one of them being Emperor Diocletian specifically, and you can see they're comparing him to Joe Biden. Many of the failed policies of Emperor Diocletian is exactly what Joe Biden is doing right now. We'll get to this article, a little bit of it, on the next segment. We'll be right back. Jesus 911. Stick around. You don't want to miss what's up.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, two-man car, we're back, and we are 10-8. And
hey, Ruben, I don't think we're going to do justice to the article in one segment. I think we just continue talking about the TLM. Get your both the reflections. We'll do this article next time we're on, because there's too much detail in it for us to cover in one segment.
Okay.
I know you got a lot of stuff there from probably Dr. Kwasniewski, which he's got some good. Ruben, there's three types of Catholics out there right now. Let's just be honest. I'll tell you where I'm at. You have Latin Mass only Catholics. I respect that. I get that. I know a lot of guys that they'll say that's the only Mass I'm going to go to. They're Latin Mass only Catholics. Then you have Latin Mass preferential Catholics. I fall into that camp. Given both options, my preference would go to be to a TLM. But I'm not going to say that I'm not going to go to the Novus Ordo if I can't get to it or during daily Mass. I mean, the FSSP is 40 minutes away from me. I'll go down the street, which is right around the corner from me. So I'm a Latin Mass preferential Catholic. However, we have to be honest, Ruben. There's a lot of good Catholics. I'll take, for example, my brother, Johnny. Mm-hmm. You know him well. Mm-hmm. A lot of other good Catholics. Paul Clay, who's on the show with us. Eddie Chavez. A lot of them have never... Remember, none of us grew up under the Latin Mass. So even those that have just come back to the church, like Paul Clay a few years ago, those that have been lifelong Catholics, like Eddie Chavez and Johnny, they don't... they've never really experienced. Maybe they've been to a Latin Mass once or twice in their life. But as you well know, Ruben, it's like something you have to sit there for several weeks, maybe even months, and let it wash over you like waves on a beach for you all of a sudden to go, aha, this is the heavenly liturgy that I've been looking for all my life. It doesn't happen if you just go once every 10 years, you know, once every, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I would call those Catholics, and they're all allies. This is all the, this is the clan that we have to unite, you know, the unite the clans. I would call them, you know, Vatican II conservatives or Orthodox Vatican II Catholics that don't know anything really about the Latin Mass. They haven't experienced it. And so I do feel a broken heart.
Yeah.
My heart is broken, Ruben, when I see the lack of uniformity from parish to parish, from diocese to diocese. It breaks my heart. And to me, it just, I'm just wondering, is this the diabolical disorientation of all things, especially the sacred liturgy that Sister Lucia talked about in 1980 in a letter? And I think, my opinion, that this lack of uniformity from parish to parish, this is exactly what the devil's wanted, and right. He's been doing a good job for 60 years, because we know that the Bible teaches us that God's not the author of confusion, but God's the author of peace and harmony in 1 Corinthians 14:33. So I'll be honest with you, Ruben. I don't know the solution to the problem that we're in, but I know this. Even when I was ignorant about the rubrics of the sacred liturgy or the Latin Mass, I've always known the difference, I mean, between reverence and irreverence. And I can tell you that in many, many Novus Ordo parishes that I've been to, the irreverence is resounding. It's loud, and it breaks my heart, because I know that we're not giving God our best, and I know God deserves the best that we can give Him. And basically, after discovering the Latin Mass, moving out to Phoenix, Arizona, and many Catholics telling me out here, "Hey, there's a TLM, go check it out." And I did what Taylor Marshall did, Ruben, because I went once or twice the first year. Second year, I went two or three times. And then Taylor says, you can't do that way. You got to go like for 2 or 3 months straight and immerse yourself. And again, it's like sitting on the beach and getting a tan, laying there for hours. Just get a tan, stay there. Don't stay there for 5 minutes and jump out. When I did that, Ruben, I saw that, wow, objectively speaking, I'm saying, my soul saw the vertical worship of God for 1,600 years. And then I started noticing very clearly the horizontal emphasis of the Novus Ordo Mass, more community-centered, more like a Happy Meal gathering. And that's what it took for me for all of a sudden to say, I get it. Now I know what it means to worship like the saints and angels do in heaven. I don't see any guitars or drums or holding hands in heaven. What you see in heaven is antiphons, doxologies. You see order. You see constancy. You see contemplation. And so a lot of those things, Ruben, I've come to experience even at a greater level at the Latin Mass. Again, I'm not saying here that I don't go to the Novus Ordo. I do every now and then during daily Mass, because I want to receive Christ as often as possible in the Eucharist. And so, and I'm not one to say, I don't believe when people say, oh, it's a, you know, the Novus Ordo, this is invalid. No, it's not. It's every single Pope has the right to come up with their liturgy. Now, God will judge them for the fruits of those liturgy or for what they've done. I'm not Pope Paul VI. I'm not St. Pius V. They're popes. They have the authority to do what they did. Now, the question does it benefit the body of Christ? And if it doesn't, then we can't be digging in our heels. We got to say, okay, let's go to what works. And that's the problem for me with a lot of the modernists and the Novo Theologia today, is that they've seen, Ruben, that it has been a failed experiment. And what do I mean by that? 75% of Catholics went to Holy Mass before Vatican II, before 1965. Today, 8 to 10% of Catholics are going to Mass.
Right.
I mean, by any CEO standards, you would fire all the board of directors.
Right.
You'd say, you guys are all fired. Are you kidding me? We sold 75,000 6,000 widgets before 19 every year before 1965, and now we're selling 8,000 widgets in the present moment. You're all fired. That's my take, Ruben.
Yeah, but I don't think we'll ever hear those innovators apologize or go back and say, oh, we were wrong. They won't. They just won't do that. At least probably not in our lifetime. If they do, then it's going to be further on down the road.
It will be at their judgment, Ruben. And nobody's going to get away with anything. They're all old men. A lot of them already dead that we've talked about. They've already been to that exit interview. And I'm going to tell you something. Having the keys of Peter and doing something that would cause many people to lose their faith and leave the church, and then standing before Christ and having the keys of the kingdom, boy, oh boy, Ruben, I don't even want to imagine what type of judgment that happens to people like that.
Yeah, you know, just what I equated to when they changed the mass from Latin to the vernacular. Now you saw in every country they're saying it in their own language. So you could be a Catholic who's been going to the Latin mass all your life, and you were traveling through Europe or something. You could pop into a traditional Latin mass and understand it because this is what you've known all your life. Then they changed everything to the vernacular, and then now it's like the Tower of Babel. So, you know, there's so many different languages. There's confusion, and then even like you said, between parish to parish, there's the orthodoxy has it changes, it fluctuates from parish to parish, and I just found myself like saying, I just don't want to be in there and saying, oh, well, what he just said is that's not Catholic, or what, you know.
Yes.
I would see abuses, and you know, I've been to a church where they had a nun saying the homily. I said, that's wrong. You know, I've had a priest at my uncle's funeral say, hey, we don't kneel during the consecration. I go, what? You know, he says the Pope doesn't kneel. I go, well, I don't know what my Pope does. You know, I don't know what. So it was these things that were like, it was really eating at me, and I said I didn't want to be a part of it. But I too, in a pinch, if I want to go to daily mass, I don't have any traditional mass around me to go to, so I will go in and go to a, but I have to find a reverent one,
You got to shop around. You got to shop
Steve.
Around.
Yeah. Yes. And it's unfortunate that and the problem with that is that when you hear this diet of watered down Kumbaya Catholicism. And again, it's not in every parish, but in the ones that I'm complaining about, you take your family there, and what happens is that they're going to end up losing their faith because it's not being, you know, preached from the pulpit as, you know, from the what the church has always taught, and so it gets watered down, you know. Consequently, you know, you hear things like everybody's going to be saved, you don't hear about sin and purgatory and all those things, and so you start forgetting about those things, and pretty soon it doesn't mean anything to you. Your kids grow up without the faith, and then it's just not being passed on. And that's why less and less people are going to Mass. But in the traditional parishes, they're flourishing, Jesse, because people want truth. They want to be challenged. They want to be, you know, they want the faith proclaimed the way, you know, it was our forefathers gave it to us.
Yeah, Here's, I'll tell you, one of the things that has done it for me to see the beauty of the Latin Mass and why I prefer the Latin Mass. Again, I'm not a Latin Mass only Catholic. I'm a preferential Latin Mass Catholic. There's three forms of prayer. It's even in the New Catechism: vocal, meditative, and contemplative prayer. Contemplative prayer being the highest form of prayer throughout Christianity. It's always been taught that by the St. John of the Cross, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Ignatius of Loyola, highest form of prayer, St. John Vianney, St. Padre Pio tells us. Well, when I go to the Latin Mass, it's almost entirely contemplative prayer for the lay people because the priest is praying to God on our behalf. And so as the priest prays for us, a lot of times I just close my eyes and I could see a tidal wave of actual and sanctifying grace wash over me. To me, going to the Latin Mass, Ruben, it's like standing underneath a holy waterfall and knowing that the priest in the person of Christ is praying for me, and that sacred silence in the Latin Mass allows me to contemplate God, heaven, the angels, my beloved parents who are dead, the afterlife, my particular judgment, the joy of salvation, the meaning and purpose of life. And the Bible is very clear about being silent before the presence of the Lord. There's too many Bible verses for me to quote. Psalm 28, Psalm 46, Psalm 37, Psalm 62. It is very, very important God speaks to us in our silence. It tells us in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 9 to 13. And so that's why I prefer the Latin Mass.
Well said, Jesse. Those of you who don't know, the Latin Mass is the only rite in the Catholic Church that has been canonized. Go look up Pro Primum, promulgating the Tridentine Liturgy. That was just by Pope St. Pius V in 1570 at the Council of Trent. So, I'm a Sunday-only Latin Mass.
I know you are.
Okay.
All right. Take it away, Ruben.
All right. You've been listening to Jesus 911. If you like the show, share it with others. And stay tuned for Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Mishuta. Gary's always got a great show, great lineup of guests. So we are out. We're 10-7. I'll see you on Thursday. Keep the faith. God bless you.